Okay, we're going to call this meeting of Senate Highways and Transportation to order. Secretary, take the roll, please.
Vice Chair Wellborn.
Excused.
Vice Chair Boland.
Here.
Senator Bennett.
Here.
Senator Fitzpatrick.
Here.
Senator Fox.
Oh, here.
Senator Fidel.
Excused.
Senator Glidden.
Excused.
Senator Gross.
Here.
Senator McGilvray.
Excused.
Senator Manzella.
Here.
Senator Sands.
Here.
Senator Smith.
Excused.
Chairman Vance.
Here. Okay, members of the committee, we actually have a sponsor. He left early because he wanted to make sure he was first in line. So with that, we are going to open the hearing on House Bill 267, Representative. Whenever you're ready. Representative Durham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My name is Neil Durham. I'm a representative from Northwest Montana, House District 2. Last name is spelled D-U-R-A-M, as in Mary. Today, House Bill 267. This is a culmination of more than a year's efforts from many different parties on this. If we can back up in time to November 2019, sweet little girl was getting off the school bus with her two brothers and sisters. It was in November of 2019. And in her haste, she got off the bus. All she saw was her dad. And she took off running towards him. On that day, not one vehicle passed her bus with the red lights on, but two vehicles sped by that bus, stopped with its lights on, and the second vehicle struck sweet little Jordana. She's still struggling today, but smiling, but she has our continued prayers. That event started this bus safety push, in particular a group called Jordana's Alliance for Bus Safety, or JABS is their acronym. They were formed and essentially grabbed all the legislators and senators they could get by the elbow and brought this to the top or the forefront of our thought. So early in 2020, we had movement with practically all the Flathead County legislators and bus administrators for discussion. In that discussion, we discussed many of the options that we could do to solve the problems. The solution, we all have the same intent, and that's safety for our children on the on their school bus routes. The other consensus that I've always known, I've been a state trooper for 26 years for the Montana Highway Patrol, and I've always known the safest conveyance for our children to and from school is on the school bus. That is, bar none, the safest way for us to get our kids to and from school. The weakest link in that process is that they're at the school bus stop when the kids are waiting in the dark, when the kids get off of school, and in particular, the red light violations. I don't know exactly when the laws were last adjusted for school bus stops, but I'm confident it was a long, long time ago, before my career started with the Highway Patrol. In these meetings, one representative from Bozeman talked about his school bus route, and he had 29 violations in a single morning. And, of course, my head just was spinning on top of my shoulders at how we can allow this to exist. I see each and every violation as a problem lying in wait, PLW. And each problem lying in wait is just moments away from a life-changing event. Every time we cast the dice, every time we have a problem lying in wait, each and every event runs the chance for a tragedy. I've used the expression or the analogy of the game Yahtzee. If you cast the dice enough times, eventually you'll get a Yahtzee on the first roll. Of course, in real life, a Yahtzee is a tragedy, and it's my goal, it's our goal, that we not have any further tragedies relating to school bus stops. Another representative from the Big Fork school system, Rob Tracy, if I could throw his name out, he will likely be a proponent today, if he can get the Zoom figured out. He and his superintendent of schools had a discussion, and they both came to the same conclusion. Whatever cost, it doesn't matter. We need to make our school bus stop safer. They were the first school system to begin the use of extended stop arms. These extended stop arms, I've got a handout there on your table. It shows two examples of it. The bus on top, that is a school bus that Big Fork school system operates with their extended stop arm. That, when we started this process, that's what we envisioned. Honestly, I envisioned something more like a railroad tie, so that if you're going to drive by these buses, it's going to cut your car in half. Of course, that's childish of me. that's my dad speaking through me, because we can solve this in a couple ways. But again, this is the prudent way, this extended stop arm. This is reasonable, this is prudent. The bottom picture is another alternative stop arm, and it's not my intent that we standardize or legislate exactly which arm, which proprietor that we go with. I just want an extended stop arm. And let's see, I'm a little ahead of my process here. Let me walk through the bill, because there's a lot of changes in the bill. If you would indulge me and go through the bill with me. So my legislative intent, real quickly, for House Bill 267, I have 5 points that I want to have us make changes. One, I want to prohibit vehicles from traffic, vehicular traffic from overtaking a stopped school bus on the bus's right side. Of course, the right side of the bus, that's where our precious children get on and off the school bus. You'll find this change on page 2, line 24, 61-8-351, section B. The second change that I want us to consider is allow a school bus to load and unload children without, that's without, the red or amber lights activated if, capital I, if the school bus stop is stopped outside of the roadway. In Montana, our roadway is defined as the traveled portion of the roadway, essentially from white line to white line. That's where vehicles travel. Current law, the only time, or any time a child gets on or off the school bus, the red lights have to be activated. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. There's two minor exceptions. The one is if they're at the school system in the parking lot, and the school board says, yep, that's what we can do in our school system, they can not activate the lights. The other is an option that, in my knowledge, I've never heard used, and that's if they can get off a separate roadway in a special designated school bus stop. And to my knowledge, none of those exist. And I've actually, once this bill started, someone told me that there is a place that exists, but the school system doesn't use it. So where does this come into play? Again, I mentioned this, the last changes to this bill or to this law, 61-8-351, preceded my career with law enforcement. And since then, our roadways have changed significantly. In particular, Highway 12, it's now four lanes of traffic, 70 miles an hour, and I've actually had the opportunity to see school bus stops on that route going to and from this legislative process. And, of course, the bus stops, occupies the right lane of the of travel. All the lights go on, all the traffic stops, and the child gets out. None of us, and no parents, would condone or allow their children to cross these multiple lanes of traffic. And so it's my proposal, if you as a committee would be in agreement, that it would be equally safe and arguably safer for us to make a school bus stop if the school bus could get outside of the roadway on the shoulder, not turn on its all lights, and make a big event, and the children get off the bus, head directly to their driveway. A third consideration for my legislative intent was to prohibit children from crossing multiple lanes of traffic at a school bus stop. Again, I alluded to it just prior that we don't want our kids playing Frogger across multiple lanes of traffic. The school bus driver has little control of over that child and less over the traffic around him. And it's my opinion, the further the child is away from the bus, the less control that the bus driver can exert on that. There's my opinion, there's always a better way than allowing a child to cross multiple lanes of traffic. So part of my legislative intent is to prohibit children from crossing multiple lanes of traffic. The fourth objective is to require an extended stop arm on the school bus that would partially obstruct the lane of traffic if the child would be crossing the lane of traffic. This is probably the most contentious issue of this bill. You'll hear opponents today expressing their concern about the cost of the extended stop arm. And in the House committee, I considered waffling on this issue. After careful consideration, I'm unwilling to waffle on this issue. But again, this is your bill. As a committee, you guys make those decisions. If children would not be crossing the roadway, then the extended stop arm would not be required. And so I would encourage school systems to find better options than allowing children to cross the roadway. Sometimes that's the only practical means forward. Some of the concerns for this extended stop arm is the reliability of them. Are they going to stand up to the weather? And I am the first to acknowledge that Montana is a big state, and so the Big Fork school system, they've been operating their school buses with the extended stop arms for more than a year now. Everything's working just fine. But Big Fork is not Wolf Point. And so I understand the weather, the wind, that stop arm, as you can see on the top of that diagram, 80 mile an hour winds, I don't know what they're going to do to it. And so then when we start looking at the other options and that lower arm, I think that will survive in Wolf Point. Part of this is to, if I can back up just a little bit, page 4, line 8 through 11, that involves the extended stop arm. You'll see there's quite a few changes in this bill, and just because something is lined out doesn't mean it necessarily has gone away. It was probably just fit into another spot. Page 4, line 8 through 11. And that mandates when we have the extended stop arm. This is probably about the most reasonable time for me to express my hope that this committee could consider an amendment to this bill, specifically line 13, where it says the extended stop arm, a distance of 72 inches. At the time this bill was written, I was aware of just the single vendor for this extended stop arm. Since then, I've had two other stop arms considered. Both of them are just under 72 inches, and so I think 58 inches would be a more convenient number for us if you would consider that amendment. Part of this bill also, I want strict accountability for any vehicle that would contact a stop school bus, or children that get on or off the school bus, or any extension from the school bus, including the extended stop arm. That was some of the initial concerns in the discussions, is what happens if a car hits that extended stop arm. And as I mentioned earlier, I would like to see that stop arm be a railroad tie or something significant. But again, that's not prudent, that's childish. But having said that, you'll see on page 2, line 19, and also page 5, line 18, creates a barrier around the school bus of 30 feet that is a no-go zone. No vehicle should enter that area. That's designed for the bus and for the children getting on the bus or leaving the bus at the end of the day. My fifth point on the bus, which I actually expected more pushback and more email communications from, and I've received nothing but positive comments on it, and this is to mandate law enforcement officer investigate the offense and make contact with the reporting party after the investigation is completed. Currently, if a violation occurs, if enough information is gathered by the witness, we'll say the bus driver, they fill out a form, they get it to their boss, they forward it to the highway patrol or the sheriff department. The other thing I stepped over is essentially the sheriff department. I want them to the sheriff is the head law enforcement officer in every county. And so the highway patrol's mission is to assist the sheriff specifically for traffic enforcement. And so although the highway patrol is the ones that typically investigate these offenses, it goes through the authority of the sheriff. So the offense is investigated by a law enforcement agency currently. If the vehicle's found, if the driver admits to the offense, if there's enough evidence, then a notice to appear is issued, and we have our day in court. I'll say it's typical for the reporting party to not know what's going on. They submit their form. That's the last they ever hear of it. Occasionally, they get notice a few weeks before the trial that, hey, we've got a trial on whatever day. It's my intent that every law enforcement officer complete the investigation, and at the conclusion of that investigation, within 30 days, report back to that reporting party with whatever he comes up with the investigation. If he can't find the vehicle, so be it. If he can't nail down who the driver is, so be it. I want that loop to close so the reporting party at least knows that the offense was investigated thoroughly and that we've done all that we can. I've used the expression, this is kind of a spur in the ribs, if you will, for law enforcement. Of course, I take each of these offenses seriously in my day job. I expect all my troopers to do the same, and my expectation is that we as a committee and as a legislative body can send the message to our law enforcement that this is a serious offense, and we want them to make their best effort to get to the bottom of the investigation. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time and consideration. I look forward to questions and the testimony from our proponents and opponents.
Thank you, Representative Durham. At this time, we will hear from proponents, and I would ask that the proponents keep in mind the fact that Mr. Durham did almost a 20-minute opening, and so he explained the bill very well. So what I would ask from the proponents is to be brief and just say that you support what he has to say and try not to be repetitive. Thank you. Proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ole Hedstrom. That's H-E-D-S-T-R-O-M. I come before you today representing the Montana State Council of Professional Firefighters. We stand in strong support of Representative Durham's bill, House Bill 267, and urge to pass.
Thank you, Mr. Hedstrom. There apparently are no more proponents in the building, so we will go to proponents on Zoom. Proponents on Zoom.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dennis Parman. I'm the executive director of the Montana Rural Education Association. We would certainly defer to the sponsor's experience as a Montana Highway Patrolman and his research that he's done on this bill. School safety, particularly around buses, not only as they travel, but in particular, specific to the intent of this bill, is students loading and unloading from buses. It's critically important. What I'm about to say is without hyperbole, even as much as it may seem like it's not, school buses across the state of Montana travel millions of miles each year. And we all know how diverse Montana is in terms of the geography and how highways that make their way across our state have to deal with all of that geography, and then you put a school bus on it with children and students. But we believe in the end that the bill does an excellent job of addressing some very important issues, and we'd offer our support, Mr. Chair, and we'd ask for it to concur.
Thank you, Mr. Parman. I show two more proponents. Is that correct? Can you hear us? Can you hear us? It's working pretty pretty good again. Do we have...
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I should be online. My connection dropped.
Do we have two more proponents?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have to bring a VM. I'm no longer host, so it will just...
Love this technology. Can I assume that none of you folks are proponents of this bill?
No.
Okay. I was going to try to fill some downtime, but I guess not.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can we identify the proponents and maybe I could, in closing, what they would discuss?
Yeah, we have their names here, so yeah, that'd be fine.
Paul Tracy and Drew Bolstead?
Right.
Maybe just to save time.
Sorry, I got way late.
Oh, I appreciate that, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The sponsor is going to speak for the two that you're having trouble with, so we will move on from that. Okay? Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
So do we have a late proponent? Is that what we have?
We do, Mr. Chair. I apologize.
Should be really brief, right?
Very brief.
Thank
Jesse
you.
Jesse Luther, last name Luther, on behalf of the Association of Montana Troopers. We rise in support of this bill. We think that it is an important bill. It helps protect children's safety when they're getting on and off the school buses, as I'm sure you have heard. And we do urge a do concur. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Luther. At this time, we'll hear from opponents to House Bill 267.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mike Kraut, K-R-O-U-T. I own a school bus company that we transport about 3,500 kids a day in western Montana. We are in opposition to this bill as written. With that many kids, you can bet we have crossing situations. And we acknowledge the efforts of Representative Durham and applaud his efforts to improve school bus stop safety. We are all about that. That being said, we oppose some issues in this bill and look forward to working with Representative Durham on possible amendments. The first one being page 3, item 8. That buses be equipped plainly visible sign that warns drivers of the violation of penalty provided for subsection 9. There may be somebody smarter than me that can condense the violation and penalty to a point where it'll fit on the back of the school bus, but I tried and it just can't be done. So we're opposed to that. Even in 2-inch letters, it's just you get too much reading material in the back of the school bus and you have people that are actually reading the school bus and not watching out for kids. I think we can agree with that. A lot of our school buses in Montana have opted for the optional warning about railroad track crossings. So that's already on the back of school buses. So it'd be tough to fit anything else. And the second one is requiring school district trustees. I'm sorry, let me go to the page. Page 4, item 15. The Board of Trustees shall approve each school bus stop that requires a school child to cross the roadway. We are not opposed to that necessarily, but we think that it should have some representative, a school board appointed representative to do that. School boards are very busy people. In my company, in my school districts, we probably would be proposing upwards of 30 school bus stop per year, and I know a lot of school boards have a lot of important things to do. If they could just appoint somebody as a representative in their district to oversee that and maybe give a report to the school board of trustees, we think that would be a much better idea for the safety. The last one that I wanted to talk about, and I'll talk briefly about it, is the extended stop arm. We would love to see that with allow or may kind of wordage. giving us contractors, school districts, more tools in our toolbox to combat school bus stop safety is a really good idea, and we love that. But it should be up to us. It should be up to the school districts to decide whether an extended stop arm is right for that route, right for that bus. And it says in the wordage that it's under certain circumstances, but in reality, I will tell you that in my fleet, that just is about 100% of the buses. So we would like that language to say may or allow. And I will throw out one opposition to the railroad tie, and that is this is a simple fact that we could have a motorcyclist behind the school bus that cannot veer into the other lane because there's parked cars there. He or she could potentially run right through that extended stop arm. In a car, it's damage. For a motorcyclist, it's going to knock them off their motorcycle and possibly kill them. And, you know, if you're going to have an extended stop arm, you better have a video system on the outside of your bus because you're going to spend some time in court. I'm available for questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chair and Committee, my name is Patricia Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W. I'm with Matthew Transportation from Big Sandy. I'm a rural carrier. We've been doing this for 44 years. Our bus route, for an example, is 176 miles a day. Out of that 176 miles a day, about 50 miles is pavement. The rest is dirt and gravel, mostly dirt, not much gravel. And so our concern is not, we aren't against the extended arm, we're just concerned about how it will uphold on the buses. Our buses are the small 24-passenger buses, and if we have a 72-inch stop arm out and we're hitting washboardy roads, it's just, I mean, the bus itself has a hard time staying together at times. And so that's one of our major concerns. Also is the wind condition. When it was sub-zero, 50 below zero, we had 50, 60-mile-an-hour winds. And that's another concern, is we have one route that's on the prairie, and I hit winds yesterday of probably hawking about 40 miles an hour, and then with me going, stopping, the wind, getting that, and if it's a 72-inch arm, that could just blow it off, tear it off, and who knows what it would do to the bus. And then the sub-zero weather, how functional are they in the cold weather? Are they operational after a certain degree below zero? We were told 10 below. Big Sandy gets 40, 50 below zero. Not regular, but it's not very uncommon that we have. So I appreciate your consideration in these matters, and thank you very much, and I'm open for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tracy Hoffman, H-O-F-F-M-A-N. Beach Transportation, Missoula, Montana. We've been in business 79 years. Every day we transport about 3,800 school children to and from school. We all want what's safest for those kids. As a safety director, our business, our culture is safety. However, we would like to, just a few things that we have that we're against is that the bill currently written states that an extended stop arm of 72 inches would be required on buses where any student crosses the roadway. And as Mr. Kraut stated, that would probably include all of our buses, spare buses, and those who... and even our minibuses. The minibuses are a problem because they run into constricted alleys and streets that are not practical to using that stop arm on cul-de-sacs, and that stop arm would be a problem. Second thing I'd like to talk about is that although there's no cost for safety, the proposed litigation becomes an unfunded mandate as sources for initial purchase costs as well as ongoing repair and maintenance. Representative Durham has mentioned that he's looking into different options rather than that 72-inch arm. A 56-inch arm would be much more cost-effective. Right now, we're using one 54-inch lighted poly bar. The cost is $390 in comparative to the 72-inch arm, which is $2,340. So cost inhibitive for any bus company. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your consideration. I'll be open for questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Glenn.
She just answered mine.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor.
I'm a late proponent. I stayed outside so these three could give...
We're to questions, Bob, so we know you're in favor of it, so...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Glenn.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Durham, you mentioned, I think you mentioned, that you were kind of excluding kids from walking across lanes of traffic, right?
Correct. There is a change that would prohibit children from crossing multiple lanes of traffic. That would be page 4, line 8.
Okay. So,
Mr. Chair.
Walk me through how that works. Are they going to turn the bus around to get the kid on the offside of the road, or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Glimm, so in circumstances when it's just a standard two-lane highway, the bus would stop, the extended arm would go out and stop the oncoming lane of traffic. That child could then cross the roadway because the lane would be obstructed by that extended stop arm. If we're dealing with three lanes or four lanes, according to this bill, it's my intention that that child not cross those lanes of traffic, that we find another option for the bus to either turn into the driveway and have another access or find another option. I believe there are many other options much safer, much more preferable than allowing children to cross multiple lanes of traffic, particularly 70 miles an hour speed limit traffic. Mr. Chair.
Gotcha. Okay.
Glenn, are you?
Yeah, I think that was it.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Sands.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How about a question for, let's hear what the Rural Education Association has to say here.
Dennis Parman.
Relative to some of these concerns that have been raised, particularly out on those rural roads. Dennis?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sands.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the concerns mostly raised by people are out on these rural, I grew up in Fraser, so bus rides on dirt and gravel roads are pretty familiar to me. So what do you think about the questions that have been raised by Ms. Matthew and others about these requirements on those rural roads? Or does this work?
You know, Mr. Chair, Senator Sands, I've been in public education in Montana for 39 years. I worked with jobs of public instruction for 7 years. And some of the most difficult questions I took were about school bus safety and the safety of students and school leaders and trustees looking for solutions. You know, I think that where you're at in the state matters, and I don't know if the individuals who raised the concerns that you spoke about, Senator, are only working in a certain part of the state and they're convinced that in that part of the state that they wouldn't work. As I started my testimony, I really would defer to the sponsor's experience. Growing up, my dad used to hold a dollar bill in front of me and he said, "What do you see?" And I'd say, "I see George Washington," or $5, and I said, "I'm sorry." I'd say, "I see George Washington," and he says, "No, I see the Lincoln Memorial." And we're looking at the same dollar. So I don't doubt their concerns. I just am looking from the perspective of student safety, and I believe these are sound measures in the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, sponsor care to close. As long as he promises it won't be 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Time runs quickly. This is an important issue to me. Thank you. So in closing, with 100% confidence, I can say that we all share the same objective, and that's the safeguarding of our children. The discussion begins on how to or what's the best way forward. With reference to some of the concerns that came up in the hearing, I would encourage an amendment adjusting the length of the stop arm from 72 inches. I heard 56, 54, 58. I think there's going to be many options there, and perhaps 54 inches might be the most reasonable or most inclusive. I just want some obstruction in that lane of traffic so that vehicles know. What I didn't describe in my opening, my apologies for glossing over it, is when Jordana was hit, I was tasked to interview the driver, and without she's just like everyone in this room. She cared for children. This was her. She raised her arms and kind of like, I didn't know I was supposed to stop. And so really my intent for this bill is we're going to remove all doubt that you're either going to stop or you're going to crash into part of that school bus. And if it's a breakaway stop arm, so be it. I can live with that. We will buy a new one with their insurance, and we will take care of the enforcement action. The issue is we will pay now or we will pay later. The Big Fork school system demonstrated that they would see, I forget their numbers, approximately 30 violations in the fall and 30 in the spring. That was reduced down to 3 once they had their extended stop arms. 3's still more than I'm comfortable with, but I can live with 3 more than I can live with 30. Again, every violation is an opportunity for one of our children to get run over. This will reduce the number of violations, and by reducing the number of violations, it will give our law enforcement more opportunity to investigate more thoroughly. Are we willing to accept more of the same? I'm hoping I can convince you as a committee that more of the same is not acceptable. The extended stop arm is the right way forward. Another couple of the amendments that are worth discussing, page 3, line 8. I had different visions for the sign advising traffic to not pass on the right, and in this legislative process, no good way forward has come forward. And so, you know, perhaps the best thing would be to line that portion out of the bill in the amendment if the committee agrees with the opponents. Page 4, line 15, I want the school board to make the decision if there's children going to be crossing the road. Having said that, the school board or their designee, of course, they've given trust to their superintendent or to the school bus route superintendent, so perhaps some language or their designee would satisfy the opponents on that particular issue. As far as the safety of other motorists, part of the reason school bus are the safest vehicle or conveyance for our children to get to and from school is because they're big and they're strong and they're unyielding. And so fall of 2020, another driver wasn't paying attention to a school bus that was stopped the other side of the road and rear-ended a school bus that stopped. And that was his last day on earth. That ended his life from the carelessness. And again, school buses are unyielding. That's why they're safe. I'm unyielding to, you know, some of these concepts, particularly extended stop arm. Having said that, this is your bill. I trust that this committee will make the most appropriate decisions for the right way forward to safeguard our children. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for members. If you have personal questions, I would encourage you to give me a call. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Durham. And Gwen, before we close the hearing on House Bill 267, put down that Bob Gilbert was a proponent, please. And we won't be doing executive on it right away. So if you and the opponents want to work on something and bring us some amendments, you know, feel free.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's our next meeting.
Okay.
Excuse me, I meant to say opponent as written.
Okay. Okay, he's an opponent, as Bill has written. Okay. Thanks, Bob. Okay. And from looking at the list of sponsors, we know who's going to be carrying it if it comes out. Don't we, Senator Glenn?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That does close the hearing on House Bill 267. We'll now open the hearing on Senate Bill 336, Senator. Yeah. He was the first one here. And even now, nobody else has shown up. We have two more to go, and they're both House bills.
Come on.
Good afternoon.
Come on, Senator. Down, right? Chairman, committee, Senator Chris Fernell from the magical city of Billings, Montana, I bring to you today Senate Bill 336, and I appreciate that you guys put me at the bottom of the list because I was at another hearing. What I bring to you today is Senate Bill 336, which literally all it does is stretch out the time frame in regards to renewing your licenses. One of the biggest things it does is it switches it from 8 years to 12 years. The reason for this, and the reason I'm doing this for the Attorney General, is that this, even though we will lose money in the general fund, we will actually gain it on the other side via taxes. What it's going to do is it's going to reduce the amount of FTEs and amount of people having to deal with this at the DMV level at each county. But what it's going to do is it's going to stretch out our resources and allow us to use what we have in that regards. So it's very simple, very, I don't know how another way to explain it, but that's how simple this bill is. I will sit down and listen to the proponents and opponents and reserve my right to close. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. At this time, we'll hear from proponents to Senate Bill 336.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you, Senator Friedel, for bringing the bill forward for us. This is an important bill to increase our customer service and bring some efficiencies into driver services. There are a couple other things in addition to the ones that Senator Friedel had offered. We want to continue the grace period from 3 months to 1 year for renewal, so people have a year before they have to take that driver's test and exam before if they let their license expire. The other thing I would say about extending to 12 years is the cost of a driver's license is $5 a year. So currently, if you go in 8 years, you're spending $40 for a license. Because it's going to 12, you'll pay 60. So the difference in fees there is no difference in fees. It's just spread out over a long period of time. And as the senator said, it's more efficient for us to spread out our resources. It also allows temporary foreign nationals to renew online and by mail. They have to prove their authenticity when they first come in, when they renew online. We use a system called SAVE, provided by the Department of Homeland Security, to check their verification that they belong in the country. We're also asking to remove the requirement for the medical and vision from a doctor and have them self-certify on an online or mail-in. We did see a huge increase from online and mail for 3 years previous to 2020. We had a total of about 1,800 renewals online and in mail, and then in 2020 we were up to 28,300. So it's a good process for us. There is a stumbling block that's keeping some people that they can't self-certify. You can only renew once online the next time you have to come in. So we will do that. The only other thing in there is that if you're on active military duty, we allow you to renew online your entire time that you're out of the state of Montana. That's all I have. Thank you.
And Lori, before you go, would you spell your last name for the
Sure. Secretary, I figure you all know me by now. I'm going to be here a lot this week, too. Lori Bakri, and that's B as in boy, A-K-R-I.
Thank you,
Chairman.
Further proponents to Senate Bill 336.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Peden with the Montana Association of Centers for Independent Living. We don't really have an opinion on the bill. We think it's good, but what we did do is have a discussion with the department in the hallway asking that we add state IDs to the time length as well. It was just a few sessions ago where we moved them. We moved IDs from 4 years to 8 years to match it up with driver's license, and this would do the same thing 8 years to 12 years, because it doesn't make sense to make people who don't drive go to the DMV more often than those that do. So we're here to support that. We have had that conversation with the department. They are agreeable to that, and they'll work on that language. So with that, we ask for a due pass.
Thank you. Okay, we don't show any opponents or informational witnesses, so we'll take questions from the committee. Senator Manzella.
I guess the question for the sponsor or Ms. Buckery, either one. Probably Ms. Buckery.
She's just checking your balance.
Sorry.
I'm doing good. I was like...
A little calisthenics there for you. Mr. Chair, Ms. Buckery, how do we... I guess I should be sensitive about the way I say this, but how do we handle my 79-year-old grandmother that's going to have a license for the next 12 years?
Mr. Chair and Senator Manzella, at 75, your license goes to 4 years.
Okay.
So if you come in, if you're on a 12-year cycle and you come in at 69, you get a 6-year license, and then at 75, you go to 4 years.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for Ms. Buckery.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Buckery, the foreign nationals, is that any different than, at first I thought you meant that they get to renew online, but then you said everybody else does too. So theirs isn't any less stringent than what our residents are doing, right?
Mr. Chair and Senator Glenn, currently temporary foreign nationals are not allowed to renew online. Permanent residents, so foreign nationals who are permanent residents can, but the way the bill is written or the way the law is written, temporary foreign nationals. So if you're here on a work visa for a company and you're here for an extended period of time, you have to go into the office rather than renew online.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, seeing no further questions, sponsor care to close. maybe not. Or.
Well, I just wanted to make sure, Chairman, that in the event that there was a rogue question out there, I wanted to make sure that they could be answered. Thank you, Chairman, Committee. This is a great bill. As I said, the department had referred to, this is actually allowing us to spread our resources a little more thinner, so that way we don't have to increase costs, we don't have to increase individual county budgets and things like that to do this. I can tell you right now, as a person that's 41 years old, going in every 8 years, I think that 4 more years ain't gonna hurt nothing, and I think it helps out extensively our budget. Thank you.
That closes the hearing on Senate Bill 336. And have you had any luck? Okay. Well, we have two bills scheduled for today, and we so far don't have... Well, we do have a sponsor after all.
Here we go. Perfect.
Hello, Representative. Whenever you're ready, we're going to open the hearing on House Bill 188.
Mr. Chair and Committee, Denley Logie, House District 14, that's L-O-G-E. I call this bill my Road Use Equity Act. What I have here, I'm proposing a fee on electric vehicles. Currently, vehicles pay a road use gas tax, and it basically is directly related to the road use that they do. We had the original gas tax, and then later we came along with the BARSA gas tax. And what I'm doing, trying to do with this bill is, we have a lot of electric vehicles that are coming into play nowadays, driving on the highways, and we also have some trucks. And so what I did in this bill was I set up a fee that would basically cover about the same amount of dollars if a person drove a certain amount of miles for the gas tax. And what I figured in this bill was that an average of about 12,000 miles per year, and I put about a 25 mile per gallon figure on the cars, and then took that times the gas tax rate, and it came up with about $163. What I put on this bill was a fee of $100 that's added when a person goes in to license their electric car to the yearly license, they would pay this additional fee, which would be collected and sent right into the gas tax fund, to the original gas tax fund. On the vehicles, 6,000 pounds to 26,000 pounds, I figured about 15 miles per gallon, and on the gas vehicles, and that came out to be about $260. So I put a fee of $250. Now the diesel, there's a little less tax on the diesel. They came out a little bit under the $250 figure, but I thought that would be a good average and a good starting point. For the vehicles over 26,000 pounds, I figured I was having trouble getting an average mileage. The statistics weren't quite there for the big trucks, but I figured that at, I believe it was 9,600 miles at 6 miles to the gallon, and figured a figure of about $500 would be their appropriate fee they would pay in a diesel tax. So basically, that's the bill in a nutshell. And like I say, it goes through the treasurer's office when a person comes to license their vehicle, and it gets sent right in. And I think this is something we have to consider, because they are using the roads. There's the same wear and tear of a electric car on that highway as there is of a gas run vehicle or diesel run vehicle, and so this just puts them in a bracket that they can be paying for some of that road use that all the rest of us are paying. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Logie, do you know if you have any proponents in the hallway?
I do.
Would you mind going to the door and telling them it's time, please? Thank you. Proponents to House Bill 188
here. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is David Smith. I'm the executive director of the Montana Contractors Association. We're pleased to support this bill. You know, last week we just got the gas tax numbers, and the current collections are only 2.2% below what the pre-COVID projections were. So we like to drive in Montana. We like that a lot. We like our cars, like to be out there on the roads. And the more vehicles that are going to be coming with electric options, the less that gas tax grows, the less we have options to fill the roads and fix them. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bridger Malum. That's M-A-H-L-U-M, here with the Montana Chamber of Commerce. Infrastructure investment, especially the maintenance and upkeep and building of our roads and bridges across the state, is important for us to be able to do commerce and business as it relates to everything that happens in the business community. And so, in brief, I would just say that as motorists change their preferences, we need to make sure that highway funding keeps up, and therefore would urge you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Daryl James. Daryl's with two R's, Y-L, and James is the common spelling. I'm the executive director for the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. I want to thank the sponsor for bringing a thoughtful bill. It really is a simple, common-sense bill to make sure that every user of our transportation system is paying a fair and equitable portion of a user fee to maintain that system. I just want to point out a couple of stats here to make sure everybody understands this is not a novel or new approach. There are about 30 states right now that have electric fee vehicles. 14 of those also assess a fee on hybrid vehicles. 10 of those states have also enacted fees just within the last 2 years. So this is a timely bill. We're not out in front of anybody. In fact, we're probably a little bit behind. Those fees range from $50 in Colorado and Hawaii up to $225 for passenger vehicles. $225 is in Washington. So the fee that's in this bill of $150 for passenger vehicles is very reasonable and appropriate. I'd note that Alabama, Arkansas, Ohio, and Wyoming all instituted a fee in 2019 at $200 per vehicle annually. So again, at $150, it's a pretty darn reasonable fee at this point. Five states, California, Indiana, Michigan, Mississippi, and Montana, and Utah, so I can't even read my own writing, have all tied their fees to a CPI, so they don't have to keep coming back to their legislature and saying, let's up this tax, let's up this fee again. Representative Logie mentioned that that he did some calculation. I also did, just based on average road miles per year and average fuel efficiency. And again, that comes out at about $160 per year in fuel tax that would be avoided by electric vehicles. So again, I think that the $150 is low at best. It's certainly not an exorbitant fee to put on electric vehicles that use our important infrastructure here in Montana. So we thank you for your time and urge a due pass on House Bill 188. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brad Martin. That's B-R-A-D-M-A-R-T-E-N, and I'm here on behalf of the Montana Department of Transportation. Applaud Representative Logie for having the vision to set some framework up in the future for what's we all know is coming eventually. Worked with Representative Logie on part of the truck stuff for this bill, and we'll also be available for any type of questions. So, thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Dwayne Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, and I represent the Motor Carriers of Montana. We're also in support of this bill and thank the sponsor for bringing it forward. We also like to thank him for being open to raising it up to $150. As we've heard, that could maybe even go a little bit higher to be, but I think that's a good start. When we first started looking at the bill, one of the questions that I had is, does it cover trucks? And so, you know, that's what we represent as the trucks. And so we did work with a representative some on the trucks. Is $500 enough? Probably not. And then I was asked in the other side over in the House when the first electronic truck's going to go through the state. And I said probably this year. That probably was a little optimistic. Probably in the next 5 years. But the thing with trucks is it gets so confusing. There's the IRP, that's the registration that you pay amongst all the states. There's the IFTA, there's a fuel tax that you pay all amongst the states. There's the GVW, there's a fee in lieu of tax. There's a whole bunch of things that goes into play with the trucks. So I think the $500 is a good start, a good place to start. And then we talked about maybe at some point having like the Montana State University or something like that do a study and get with the nationals and try to put a lot of stuff together to see what we can do going forward. But we do support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brad Longcake, L-O-N-G-C-A-K-E. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Petroleum Marketers and Convenience Store Association. You've heard some good testimony today. Again, want to thank the sponsor. We think infrastructure is important, and we are here to support the bill. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Representative Logie, do you think that's all the proponents you have in the room?
I know we have an informational
one. Okay. But no opponents. Okay. We now will go to proponents on Zoom. I show one, assuming it's working. Okay, Mr. Brooks, whenever you're ready.
Yes, Mr. Chair, checking.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the Highway and Transportation Committee. My name is Dan Brooks, B-I-O-O-K-S. And I represent the Billings Chamber of Commerce. We rise in support of House Bill 188. Mr. Chair, members, you have my written testimony, and for the sake of brevity, I would echo the other proponents and simply add that from an equity and fairness standpoint and to ensure that we're ready to fund essential infrastructure in the years to come, we urge a due pass on HB 188. I want to just quickly thank the sponsor for his thoughtfulness in bringing this bill before you, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. At this time, we will hear from opponents to House Bill 188. I see that there are two on Zoom. Is that correct? Okay, whenever they're ready.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, whenever you're ready.
Hello, my name is Alicia Cox. I am COX. I am the Executive Director of Yellowstone Teton Clean Cities. We are a nonprofit that represents Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho, and we educate individuals, businesses, and governments about alternative fuels and transportation. And we definitely agree that electric vehicles should also pay their fair share for the roads that they use. But we just wanted to bring to attention a couple things about this bill. As mentioned previously, currently 29 states have EV registration fees that range between 50 and $225. So this $500 fee for the large trucks will be probably the only fee that large in the country. And it's a little premature without any of this type of vehicle on the roads. Currently, that type of vehicle is only in pilot phases and beta mode. And so for those fees to already be a disincentive for that type of vehicle to enter Montana, we would just like the committee to reconsider that level of fee. In addition, the $150 for the light-duty electric vehicle is a little high. $100 is about what the industry has established as an equitable fee for an electric vehicle to pay for the use of the roads. And we just wanted to recommend that how Logie originally introduced the bill, that's what it was originally, and we would recommend reducing the fee to that. And then finally, the National Association of State Energy Officials, they just updated a rubric that is to help the electric vehicle charging station industry score certain state and regions to help them evaluate the policy environment and whether they want to invest in that respective state or region. And the only thing on that rubric that is a negative score is an EV registration fee. Just wanted to bring that to your attention, as this is an industry that is on the move, and I would encourage you to promote the development of electric vehicle charging infrastructure and not disincentivize it with fees that may be a little too large for the amount of vehicles that are actually on the roads. And I would like to just close with that. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and I show one more opponent on Zoom.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Connor Kloeger. That's P as in Paul, L-O-E-G-E-R. And I am here on behalf of the Montana Environmental Information Center. MEIC stands opposed to House Bill 188, not because we believe that electric vehicles shouldn't pay some sort of registration fee. A lot of the proponents make compelling arguments as to why they should pay some sort of fee. Rather, what MEIC is concerned about is where that money is going. Currently, all that money will be allocated towards the highway tax. And we encourage this committee to amend this bill so that half of that money goes towards the highway tax and the other half goes towards electric vehicle infrastructure. The reason for that is twofold. The first is, as Representative Logie wonderfully pointed out, there are lots of electric vehicles coming into play. Recently, GM just announced that they are investing $27 billion in 30 new electric vehicle models. Therefore, that means that electric vehicles are going to become more ubiquitous as this decade rolls on, and they will become more affordable. However, less Montanans will be encouraged to purchase those electric vehicles if there isn't the requisite charging stations necessary for Montanans to use those electric vehicles. Currently, Montana is lagging behind a lot of other states. For example, there are less than 1,000 electric vehicles registered in the state. Compared to Washington, there are over 25,000 registered in the state and around 15,000 in Georgia. And the other reason why we support this amendment, absolutely, the second reason that is tourism. As more and more Americans become receive the COVID-19 vaccine, that means that more and more Americans are going to want to visit Montana. Montana's tourism industry is a huge industry, and therefore we want to encourage more Americans to visit Montana, and because more Americans are purchasing electric vehicles, they will be less encouraged to visit Montana if those electric vehicle charging stations don't exist. So to quote Mr. Martin from the Montana Department of Transportation, we all know it's coming. Therefore, Montana has to make sure that we are ready for that inevitability. Thank you.
We now will go to informational witnesses.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Lori Bakri, that's B as in boy, A-K-R-I, with the Motor Vehicles Division. We worked closely with Representative Logie, on his bill. Will require some programming in order to collect all the fees, but it's a nominal fee, and we can absorb that within the department.
Thank you. Further informational witnesses.
Good
afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members, John McDonald, last name is M-A-C, capital D-O-N-A-L-D. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. The Alliance represents manufacturers that produce about 95% of the light cars and trucks on the road today. We're here for any questions you have. Mr. Chairman, we generally have taken a hands-off position on this, but if there's any questions about how these types of fees work, how they've come about, other ideas in other states, we'd be happy to answer that. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, questions from the committee. Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor.
Representative Logie.
Mr. Chairman, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Logie, I'm one of those lucky people that likes to drive in Montana. I don't think I've had a vehicle that got less than 13,000 miles on it since I was probably a freshman in high school. So I think your numbers are a little low. In particular, I'm curious about two things. One is on page 24, line 11, it says, unless the vehicle is permanently registered, what would you think about an amendment that would change that to say that electric vehicles shouldn't be permanently registered, because as soon as they do that, they're out of paying their fair share of taxes to help maintenance on the roads?
Mr. Chair and Senator, what I considered on that was that they would pay a five-time amount. So the life of the electric, we don't know for sure, but I'm thinking the life of the electric, if you've driven 11 years and you add five more years of fee onto that in the permanent registration, I'm thinking that should cover most of the use, because I don't think the batteries will carry them, you know, without a replacement. And I'm thinking the life of the vehicle, that'll probably cover it. But I'd be amenable to any changes that you think you need to make.
Okay. Follow up.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Logie, the other thing I wanted to talk with you about, and one of the opponents spoke to this a little bit, and I have an opposite opinion. We all know that there's basically three things that wear out a road, and that's time, studs, and weight. And so I'm not sure that when you're talking about a big truck that $500 is enough money to replace what the fuel would be in a truck. And I think, didn't you say your mileage on a truck was 9,000 miles?
Mr. Chair and Senator, what I had figured was about 9,600 miles in a year. I didn't have a chance to get great figures on the average miles that they drive, and so I came up, that was one figure of local run trucks that I kind of worked out myself. You may have some over-the-road trucks to get more. They're also in the back page, there is an adjustment for a one-trip permit that when they come into Montana, there are some requirements. So there is a one-trip permit that they would pay if it's an over-the-road trucker coming in. There, with the electric trucks not being on the road right now, it is a little bit of a guess, and so that's why I was thinking we might come up with some better figures later. But I thought we need a starting point till we get some of those figures. But like I say, it is allowed in there for a one-time trip, and there's a schedule on. Basically, that's on page 27. B, little I, little one, little two, little three, and that'd be for the trip permits. And I did also allow for a there's a bus fee in here, buses, and then there's also a permanent fee for those as well.
Thank you.
Okay.
Senator Wellborn.
Thank you for the sponsor. Representative Logie, it was alluded to that maybe part of this fee should go for the, you know, fixing and repairing roads, and the other part should go to help enhance or build or whatever charging stations. So with that being said, are you aware of anywhere where you in the traditional fossil fuel industry that part of the fuel tax goes for helping people build private gas stations?
Mr. Chair and Senator, there was a little discussion even in the House Transportation and Committee asking that very question, and my answer to that, and there was asking if maybe we could even take some of the money and put charging stations in the rest area, and I said we don't want to compete with the private industry in any way, whether it's a charging station, whether it's the gas stations, which we don't compete. Public doesn't compete with private, and so to me all the money needs to go to the roads. That's my intent, and I would not want to see an amendment to try and change that.
So thank you. So follow up. So I guess what I'm hearing you say then is there's probably already an equity issue, and you're just trying to bridge that gap a little bit, but probably not even getting it all the way back to what's equitable now under this bill without changing it in that manner. Would that be a fair assessment?
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes. And even getting back to the figures I used for the transportation, for the amount of miles driven, the average was about 11 to 14, and I saw in different places. I'm just, right now, without the charging stations all over, some of the electric cars are a little limited and may not drive as far as the Senator's gas vehicles. So that's why I started with those figures. But we will get, through the years, we'll get some better figures on that and maybe have to make some readjustments, but I thought this was a good start at getting at the problem of the equity of the road use and paying for the road use.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, sponsor care. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator.
Thank you, Chairman. You guys were really engrossed in some of the questions you had, so I was fascinated. Sorry. This would be a question for the sponsor. Chairman, Representative, the good senator to my right, Mr. Welborn, or Senator Welborn, brought up an idea, or even with the opponent, talked about charging stations. Have you, I didn't see it in here, but maybe I missed it. Have you had a conversation or had a thought about, in the event, say, a gas station started offering electric plug-in, that there'd be like a fee like we have now on gas, where if someone comes in, plugs in, and they charge a fee for how many kilowatt hours or however it's taken care of? Have you had that conversation yet on top of talking about registration fees?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I've had some discussions with different people. We are not set up. We can put an electric tax basically on the charging stations, but we are not set up that way. We aren't seeing that happening. The other problem with that is that people could charge their car at home, and so you would have to have a special plug-in in their house to give them a special rate that we knew we would get taxes on, and trying to get the infrastructure of charging stations at home and out in the public and trying to make that the correct charge per mile. I know they have those figures that they're trying to come up with nationally, but we don't have them, and we don't have that set up in Montana, so I'm avoiding that as well for now.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Senator Boland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Representative Logan, please.
Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah. Representative Logie, I'm just curious. I had three different fiscal notes here. Can you tell me if the final one is the 0.03 fiscal note, just so I have the right one in front of me?
I might have to ask to get one, Mr. Chair.
I don't have a third one. I only have number two. I don't know what the hell she's talking about.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I believe that is the correct one. You see, there is a charge for the setup of the paperwork, and that's basically a one-time, and once that's in place, we move forward. And these are estimates of how many electric cars we start with and how we pick up the electric cars, and it is an estimate, and I'm thinking maybe the estimate is a little low of how many cars we'll see 3 years down the road.
Okay, I just want to make sure I have the right one in front of me. Thank you, Representative Logie. Chairman.
Now would the sponsor care to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I think you all understand the need for this bill. We need to move forward, get everybody paying their way. The figures, I've tried to explain the reasoning for my figures. There's a little bit more that plays into with the big trucks. Some of the big trucks will be, they're saying, are just a little bit heavier because of the electric motors and the batteries and everything that are involved. So there's a little weight thing. They're going to be trying to play a little game on weights. So there again, we may have to adjust a little bit more on that. And we can maybe do that on the GVW side as well. When they register their GVW, but I just feel this is one of those that we've got to jump in there and start taking care of our roads every way we can, and this just helps pay for that use. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Logie. That closes the hearing on House Bill 188. And I have a question for pretty much any member of the committee. Does anyone know of a way to contact Representative Funk, because she's the last bill?
She's out in the hallway.
Oh, she is? Okay.
I sent a message to Ryan Lynch. And
okay.
Isn't she cool?
Okay.
Or maybe she was already here. I don't know about that.
I wouldn't keep you waiting.
Representative Funk, we're now going to open the hearing on House Bill 306.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is, for the record, my name is Moffie Funk, M-O-F-F-I-E, Funk as in Uptown. And my house district 82, which is just on the west side of Montana and then goes north into the valley. This is a great bill. You are going to like it so much. And it came about, it's the result of a chance meeting and a fortuitous conversation. I'm sure all of us have had many constituents who have talked to us about some of the hoops they have to go through to start a small business, the frustrations in starting a small business. And HB 306 addresses one of these obstacles that shouldn't even be there, actually. It's quite an extraordinary story, and I'm going to sit and let Mr. Valiton tell it because it's his story. But let me just say that Mr. Valiton has jumped through all the hoops. He's done everything. He just wants to see if we can fix this so the next people don't have to do it. Thank you. And obviously, I'll answer any questions I can. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. At this time, we'll hear from proponents to House Bill 306.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks for your time today. I know it's been a long session and probably a long day. I'm here because of a passion project. I opened Vigilante Shuttles and Tours in 2019. My business is primarily in the business of showing off a city, a state, and the outdoors that I love so much as a born and raised Montanan here in Helena. Representative Funk mentions the hoops that I've jumped through. I spent the greater part of six...
Excuse me, sir, would you give the secretary your name, please?
Yes, I will. Thanks very much. Kurt Valiton, K-U-R-T.
And spell the last name.
And last name, V-A-L-I-T-O-N.
Thank you.
Like I said, passion project, I'm off and running. I spent the greater part of 6 to 8 months making sure that I dotted my I's and crossed my T's. I have permits from the Bureau of Land Management, the U.S. Forest Service, the city, the state, the Department of Transportation. And in dotting those I's and crossing those T's, I did come across the Public Service Commission and the mention of transportation. Seeing that it mentioned utilities, I moved on and started my business. In the first summer, we just created some momentum, and I got a call from the Public Service Commission that someone who saw themselves as a competitor had reported me and was concerned about my insurance. I immediately sent them the appropriate insurance, and they approved. They said that they approved that was the correct insurance, but that I would need to go through the process to gain authority with the Public Service Commission. After grinding through the code, I asked that I could meet with them and sat with their chief legal counsel, who told me, Mr. Valiton, you're correct. You're not mentioned in the code, but you're also not exempted, so we're going to have to regulate you anyway. You should call your legislator. A few short months later, at an event I was doing downtown, I met Representative Funk and found out that she lives a block behind me, and she asked if there was anything she could do for me, and I said, well, in fact, there is something, and we began the work on House Bill 306. After they told me I needed to gain those authorities, I started the process. It began with $500, and they said it would be 4 weeks. In the newspaper, I had to pay to advertise in every major newspaper in the state, and the purpose of that is to see if that anyone would object to my business having authority with the Public Service Commission. Now, the only reason they could object is based on my insurance, which had already been approved by the Public Service Commission, but they had to go through the process. If someone wanted to object, it cost them $300, and then there's a hearing. All known that I already had the correct insurance. So I went through the process. It took 8 weeks instead of four, and by the time it was finished, my season was over. It was deep into fall. And I said, well, next spring, that's when we'll push. In the meantime, I worked on my second authority, because I have to have two. One for picking up people on the curbside when they book on my website for a private or for a public tour. And number two, I have to have another authority in order to book charters. Another $500, another month, and newspaper fees, all based on the fact that I already had the correct insurance and no one could really legally object. Representative Funk said, I'm really not in this because I don't want to go through it. I've already gone through it. Now, I still do have to have an exhaustive report every year and pay a special tax to the Department of Revenue. The big piece came in when I came to the next spring and COVID-19. COVID-19 struck, and what we saw with small businesses, while they were strangled by some regulations, they really just had to be innovative and creative in order to keep their businesses going. As a regulated authority under the Public Service Commission, I can't change my rates or my offerings without having it all approved through the committee and hearings. My business was strangled by the regulation. I couldn't do much but sit and wait out COVID-19 and be thankful for the grants that helped me survive it. From the What We Do For You page at the Public Service Commission, it describes the commission as this. The Montana Public Service Commission strives to ensure that ratepayers have continued access to utility services that are affordable, reliable, and sustainable for the long term. In pursuit of this goal, the PSC regulates the rates and service quality for investor-owned electric, natural gas, water, wastewater, and legacy telecommunication companies, period. Though they differ in form and function, companies in these industries all have one thing in common. They are monopolies with a captive set of customers. It's the PSC's job to balance the interest of ratepayers who are concerned about the utility rate increases with the need to maintain a financially sound utility that is capable of providing reliable services. So it seems the intent of the Public Service Commission in public transportation is twofold: to ensure citizens can afford a ride to the doctor, grocery store, or distant family, and to ensure carriers operate safely and are insured appropriately. Outdoor recreation and tourism carriers do not provide the former service, and the Montana DOT does a far more thorough job of the latter. No one wants unsafe carriers or fly-by-night operations. The Montana Department of Transportation did a thorough audit of my business, and when I say thorough, I had to apply for a job at my own company. When they asked for my medical DOT card to prove that I had a health examination, I had to show them the card. I had to prove that the physician was, in fact, certified to do that test and that he was a physician. I happened to work with the man. I'm a nurse as well. He works down the hall. We sent him his wall certificate from his medical school and all. But the insurance regulations and my documentation were thoroughly gone through by the Department of Transportation. I can tell you they did a lot more than the PSC did to ensure the safety of my business. Passenger carriers and tour providers in outdoor recreation and tourism are not public utilities, monopolies, nor do we have a captive audience. We are, however, part of the number one and number two income and job producers in Montana. We strive to provide, and our customers expect, exceptional service and experiences. These experiences, in turn, support Montana small businesses, industry, employees, and families. Nobody gets in my shuttle on the way to a mountain bike shuttle or a trail shuttle to a brewery tour without me telling them all about where they should shop that day, have lunch, take their family for fun events. I support everything. I do all that I can to drive people into local businesses to continue to support our economy. The Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research showed that tourism is a leading industry in Montana. In 2019, 12.6 million.
Excuse me, is this on the Public Service Commission regulation changes? Or, I mean, we all know how important tourism is to Montana. But
well, then I'll skip that part.
This is about the Public Service Commission.
It is, and it's about the Public Service Commission regulating outdoor rec and tourism. Regulations intended to limit us at just barely profitable with useless, expensive, and time-consuming processes cripple our businesses and limit important Montana revenue and jobs. My business has a partnership now with Visit Helena Bike Helena to operate the Trail Rider program, which is a 10-year-old program that is no-fee trail shuttles here in Helena. We also have a partnership with the Montana History Foundation to operate their guided history hikes in Helena in the next few years. My business and our businesses like that, are definitely, you can see their value as well as their need. I'm not here in this bill. It was not created to subvert laws or safety. Its intent is to make the law current for our time, to allow dreams to be realized, and for Montanans and Montana to reach their potential. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you. I see one proponent on Zoom. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Haberman, whenever you're ready, but as I stated a minute ago, keep your comments to the Public Service Commission and their regulations, please.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, and thank you, Chairman Vance and the committee. My name for the record is Doug Haberman, H-A-B-E-R-M-A-N-N. I'm here, as usual, representing Bike Walk Montana. We are in support of HB 306 as it supports small businesses, provides an important service to its residents and visitors alike, and reduces unneeded government oversight. I'm going to repeat a little bit. Shuttle services, transportation for small groups to weddings and other events, and local tour opportunities like our Helena Trolley directly benefit and add to our $3.7 billion annual tourism economy. Local operators like Mr. Viatom provide a beneficial service beyond transportation, providing both historical and area information, including visitors, helping visitors understand local custom rules and regulations to better treat our land and each other. Let the Public Service Commission focus on our utilities and single provider services, support all business groups, and freedom from bureaucracy. Please join the 99 members of the House of Representatives and vote yes on HB 306. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Haberman. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, sponsor care to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. That's the thing. The PSC regulates utilities, public transport, and these bus and shuttles should not be on it. And that's what HB 306 does, is just clarify. There are a few sections of code that you probably know better than I do, as convoluted and complex as transportation under the PSC. So our Montanans have shown great resiliency over these last year. Let's do what we can to reward them rather than punish them. Thank you for a very simple hearing.
Thank you, Representative Duncan. That closes the hearing on House Bill 306. Okay, members, I do want to try to do a little bit of executive action. We've got four bills, and I spoke with Senator Boland, and she was okay with us looking at these four. And so the four I have are Senate Bill 285, House Bill 184, House Bill 207, and House Bill 383.
Steve's on the deal, so we can just...
Steve who?
Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm. That guy?
Oh.
I'm doubling up.
Okay.
So we're
going to
have 12
votes.
I hate to vote to table.
Okay, because this is the bike bill. Let's start with the Senate bill, though.
start with 280.
When I do that, when I go to move it, just say
move to table. Yeah, non debatable motion, or just vote. Let's get it out of the way.
That would be funny.
So we're doing the House bill first? Or the Senate
bill? Yeah, we'll do the one Senate bill first.
All right, Mr. Chair,
do you have a list?
I'm just going to grab the Morris car release folder.
Oh, I don't know. You'll have to ask Gwen.
It's over in the window there.
Okay, I'll start.
Did you vote? Yes.
Did you guess that? I don't know. We have a cash flow rule today.
The Fitzpatrick clones.
Okay. So you're ready? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move do pass on Senate Bill 285.
Okay, folks, Senate Bill 285 is from Senator Heimbaugh. This is the moving the fuel around as far as how he picks it up and how he pays for it and how he gets reimbursed. He feels that the fiscal note is not accurate, but he said that if we pass it out, he's going to deal with that in finance and claims. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Senator Glenn?
Question.
Question's been called. Let's try a voice vote on this one if we could. All those in favor of Senate Bill 285, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, thank you. Senate Bill 285 passes.
Senator Gross votes aye by proxy.
Thank you. Yeah, 184. Okay. Senator
Wellborn. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a substitute motion to table House Bill 184.
We have a table motion on House Bill 184, non-debatable. Roll call vote, please.
Tabling motion on HB 184. Vice Chair Wellborn.
Yes.
Vice Chair Boland. Vice Chair Boland.
Can she hear you? Are you muted?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Vice Chair Boland?
No.
No. Senator Bennett?
No.
Senator Fitzpatrick?
Yes.
Senator Fox?
No.
Senator Friedel?
Yes.
Senator Glenn?
Yes.
Senator Gross?
No, by proxy.
Senator McGilvray?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Manzella?
Yes.
Senator Sands?
No.
Senator Smith?
Yes, by proxy.
Chairman Vance?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, 8 members have voted aye, 5 have voted no.
House Bill 184 has been tabled. Senator Wellborn? 207.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move a do pass motion on House Bill 207.
Members, House Bill 207, in case you don't remember, this is the one where they want to add lights to school buses. That in some situations they feel the lights that are on the school buses now are not adequate. So does anybody have any comment on this one?
School buses.
Yeah. Question. Question's been called. Can we try a voice vote on this one, maybe? All those in favor of House Bill 207, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Hey, Senator Wellborn is the only no.
Senator Gross votes aye by proxy.
And we need a sponsor for House Bill 207. Is there anybody that would have any interest?
Sure, I'll take it.
Okay. Senator Friedel.
Already did lights already for once today. Take the team.
This would be the dissenting vote.
They give you
second half.
Because then you don't have to pay the bill, right?
Hey, I'm the guy that's so lazy that I married a... No.
Hot mic, hot mic. And say...
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move do pass on House Bill 383.
We have a due pass on House Bill 383. This is the bill by Representative Usher that wants to exempt three-wheeled motorcycles, the operators, from having a motorcycle endorsement. And I did speak after the hearing with Ms. Bakra, and because I was pretty sure that his information was correct, but I followed up with her, and these folks are kind of in a catch-22. If you're going to get a motorcycle endorsement, you have to take the test. If you're going to take the test, you have to be on a two-wheeled motorcycle. And a lot of the people that ride three-wheeled motorcycles are riding them because due to physical situations they're in or due to their age, they can't ride a two-wheeled motorcycle. They're not capable. So they're kind of in no man's land. They can't get the endorsement, so they can't ride their three-wheeled motorcycle, and from her standpoint, she thinks it makes perfect sense to exempt them. So for what it's worth, I just thought I would pass that along to you.
So you, comments? Mr. Chairman, you're in opposition to the bill?
I'll probably carry it, Senator Glenn.
Question?
If it passes. Probably. Questions, comments?
Question.
Okay, question's been called. Let's step out and try a voice vote again. All those in favor of passing House Bill 383, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Senator Gross votes aye by proxy.
Thank you. And just so you know, I am going to tell Barry Usher we killed it initially. So. Okay, thank you, folks. We got a lot done today. So
late to committee.
Yeah, exactly. We'll attempt to do something similar on Thursday because we have four bills on Thursday also. So unless there's anything else, we're done. Thank you.
Thank you.